The Cannabis Conversation. A European perspective on the emerging legal cannabis industry.
Welcome to the Cannabis Conversation with Anuj Desai, where we explore the new legal cannabis industry by speaking to the professionals that are helping to shape it. On today's show, I have Montel Williams. Montel is an Emmy Award-winning TV personality and had a very successful talk show in the 1990s and the noughties. He's also now a prominent medical cannabis advocate and activist. I'm really excited to have him on the show. Montel, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Anuj.
Real pleasure, real pleasure. How are you doing at the moment?
I'm doing great, but just for your listeners to know, I literally have been involved in cannabis long before this became vogue and, you know, people tried to jump aboard a green rush. I've been involved with, working on legislation changes and trying to allow patients to have good access to medical cannabis for now 20 years.
Wow.
And started my advocacy back in about 2001 and have never looked back.
Yeah, that's brilliant. But we'll get to talk about a bit more about your background and, you know, where it all started and what you're up to now in a minute. But, you know, I remember you well from the 90s when I was a teenager because your show was on in the UK. But yeah. Perhaps some of my younger audience might not know some of your background. Would you mind sort of telling us a bit about, you know, your history and in particular how you kind of moved into the cannabis advocacy?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. You're right. A lot of your younger listeners may not recognize me. But I was one of the only American shows, I think, that literally was syndicated in the UK for several years. As a matter of fact, there was a while I was back. I think you were one of my first international audiences. And I, along with Oprah, were probably two of the only shows you had there that was consistently broadcast from the United States. And the UK also allowed me to be for the first time, actually beat Oprah in the ratings for a little while. I was
brilliant.
On BBC. And then, I think I went over to Granada Sky when that was first created and stayed there for quite a long time. So I enjoyed my time. And I came over to London several times to promote the show and had an opportunity to, you know, do a couple of your local, you know, morning television shows as promotion and, you know, spent some time over there. So I was really, really, really glad that I had an opportunity to syndicate there. But to go back to the beginning, a lot of people don't know a lot about my background, but I literally, you know, after graduating from high school, I enlisted in the Marine Corps and then was selected to go from the Marine Corps to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, to be commissioned as a naval officer. And I spent and did a, you know, 22-year duration career in the military. It spanned that 22-year period of time in both active duty and reserves. And literally walked right out of the military and started the Montel Williams Show in 1991.
Wow.
Went on the air. And the show stayed on the air for 17 years. It was one of the longest running shows on American television history for a while. It ended up, you know, airing in about 35 countries around the world. It was very successful. I won an Emmy as a talk show host. And the show was nominated for multiple Emmys as a show itself. But I won for host. And it was really, you know, an extremely good career. I started a brand before my show ended, which was called Living Well with Montel, where I was literally focused on a lot of healthy living advice and wrote several books. But right before, in 1999, I suffered what was really my second major bout with MS, multiple sclerosis, unbeknownst to me at the time. And I had been misdiagnosed with MS for almost 20 years at that point in time. And my initial diagnosis back in, you know, 1999, 2000, 2001, led me down the path of opioid use because one of my early symptoms was extreme neuropathic pain. And I had one of my doctors back then, this is back in 2000, suggested to me that I would probably fare better if I got off the opioids and maybe shifted over to this stuff. And the way he said it was, you know, I've heard that this stuff, you know, marijuana, cannabis kind of works for people who have your type of MS and you ought to look it up. He said, I can't recommend it to you. I can't even suggest it to you, but I'm just giving you throwing it out there and saying, if you do the research, you might find that it's more beneficial to you than the opioids you've been on. And I started my journey back in 2000 and literally attempted to learn as much as I could. When I found out that, you know, cannabis was a good alternative to some of the other treatments that were out there and available for MS, I started using it and literally within 3 months put all of my opioid use behind me and have been using ever since. And because once I found out what it would do for me and how it was helping me, I wanted to make sure I shared as much information as I could with as many other people as I could, and also wanted to make sure that other people had the same kind of access that I had. And so I started my advocacy back in really 2001, working to help make legislative changes across America in multiple states. I probably worked on, you know, 7 of the first 19 states that actually legalized medical marijuana in the country, and helped work to, you know, develop their legislation and push it through to get it passed.
Brilliant. There's so much there. Did you find it a challenging experience to start using cannabis as to help you with your ailment? Was it, you know, were you hesitant about doing that?
Well, no, absolutely. Because, you know, back then, let's go back to 1999, 2000, you know, as it is today, cannabis in the United States is still considered a Schedule I illegal drug. And even though several states have, you know, now passed legislation, they are really in direct opposition to federal law, though the federal law has now decided to not utilize any funding to prosecute cannabis cases, it still is against the law. And back then, you know, there were very few people. I was probably one of the only ones. I maybe remember Woody Harrelson and maybe one or two others who were extolling the virtues of cannabis, but most people were keeping their mouths very, very quiet and not saying anything. And I mean, I went from 2000, you know, to 2010, 11, and 12, literally being ostracized by lots of people, especially people in the medical community, trying to claim that there was no medical efficaciousness to cannabis, even though those same people knew that the United States government had the nerve to issue itself a patent on cannabinoids back in 2002. So, you know, we have a country and I live in a country that literally is as hypocritical as it can be, because out of one side of its mouth, it says that cannabis has no medical efficaciousness. And then out of the other side of its mouth, it says in its patent abstract that it is, you know, one of the most powerful anti-inflammatories and, you know, analgesics for, you know, fight against neurological disease. So it was a tough journey. You know, I met with a lot of pushback from a lot of doctors and a lot of people who were so-called, you know, authorities who really knew nothing. And we're starting to find out more and more about what people don't know rather than what people do know.
And how about your friends and family as well? Was there any kind of, you know, funny looks from them, or could they actually see the improvement that it was giving to you?
Oh, almost to the person, everyone understood why I was doing it and literally applauded me for, you know, trying to take control over my illness. And, you know, lots of people had constantly commented on the fact that they could see very clearly, you know, when I was using cannabis, the effect that it had on my illness, because it really helped me to control some of my spasticity. It literally helped to not nullify, but helped me cope with my pain in a different way than I had been dealing with opioids. And, you know, it took care of and helped to abate, or at least helped me deal with some of my symptoms way better than I had been.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. And I also have had Steve D'Angelo on the show previously, who's obviously another long-term advocate like yourself. How have you seen things change over the years, you know, because you've been sort of pushing the cause for so long?
Well, I mean, you know, what has happened, and, you know, COVID kind of brought a lot of this to a screeching halt, which it should not have, because, you know, I don't know if you know or you're aware there, you know, in the UK that, you know, there has been several peer review written documents that have stressed the fact that cannabinoids seem to have an anti-inflammatory effect that's better than almost all the drugs that are being used right now for inflammation, even when it comes to COVID. Yet, you know, again, we have science that is trying their best to, you know, hold their nose and claim that it's not true, but they know it's a lie. Even in the, you know, the fact that we have now seen in the last 3 to 4 years more information coming out about information that we've known for over 20 years. I mean, you know, if you go back to 1986, 87, you know, the world knew back then that mammals, including humans, have something in us that's called an endocannabinoid system, which is a sympathetic nervous system, for lack of a better term, but it's a additional nervous system inside of our bodies that we are born with, genetically have, that is antagonized in particular by cannabinoids. We actually, as human beings, make our own cannabinoids. We make two of them. That's all we've discovered so far, but we know we're going to discover more. We actually produce cannabinoids in our bodies. One of them is called anandamide, and the other one's called 2-AG. And we recognize that it's those cannabinoids that are picked up by receptors in our brain and in our peripheral organs called CB1 and CB2 that are really responsible for cellular homeostasis. So, and what I mean by that is for helping to keep our cells operating at 100% efficiency. Mm-hmm. So this is something that we should be as mammals consuming because we have a genetic predisposition for it. Mm-hmm. What is so ridiculous is that, you know, the world got hoodwinked by the U.S. back in 1937 into believing that there was something wrong with hemp and cannabis because you had ulterior motives by other people, you know, William Randolph Hearst, Charles DuPont, who were trying to just completely saturate the world with textiles and destroy most of the wood products on the planet, that we allowed them to vilify something that has been known as a medication for well over 5,000 years in human history. So, and you say, what has changed in the last 20 years? Man, since I got involved in this, there is so much that has changed, but there's so much that stayed the same because there are so many people still willing to remain ignorant rather than educate themselves.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot there. Lots to do, lots of work still to do, but it's encouraging that things have moved on a bit in the last few years. If we can, if you don't mind, would you mind sort of talking a bit about multiple sclerosis, actually, and sort of what exactly is it and how is cannabis helping with it?
They should see their doctors. They should have good, solid conversation with their doctor. And if their doctor recommends it to them, then they should go down that path. Multiple sclerosis is, in Latin, multiple scars. Sclerosis means scars, and scars are the scars that appear in our brains and in our spinal cords in an area that's called the myelin sheath. And if you, you know, for lack of better explanation, myelin is a coating around the nerve endings that we have throughout our body. And if you were to look at the brains or spinal cords, lateral sclerosis is if you have it in your spinal cord. But if you look at the brains, which is multiple sclerosis, that means multiple scars. People who have it, there seems to be, and it depends on which side of the ocean you live on. Western medication seems to believe that it's an autoimmune disease. Eastern medication seems to think that it's a disease that has been caused by some form of pathogen that we've not discovered yet. Mm-hmm. And the immune system is attempting to attack that pathogen. And that pathogen then is what we know, we believe, travels inside the myelin in, you know, people's nerves in that coating. And, you know, our immune system then goes after, you know, attacking that. And basically, if you were to think about, like, you know, a wire cord, a wire, electrical wire that you plug into the wall, if you took a knife and you scraped the plastic off of it and bare that copper wire open to the air, it will oxidize and it starts to rust. And then it'll eventually rust so far that it breaks. Mm-hmm. Something is happening in the people with MS where something is attacking that coating, scraping it away, leaving that nerve bare, that nerve rust and breaks. And then it impairs the signals being sent from the brain to the areas that that nerve represents.
Right.
For some reason, you know, when we attempt, and we've always known, this is something that's been known since day one, when opioids were first created, we knew that opioids don't have a long-term use. Opioids work best for short-term use and short-term prescription because they initially have the ability to block the signal between the brain and, let's say, an area of pain, and it interrupts that signal enough to make you not necessarily focus on the pain. But then over time, it loses its ability to do that. Mm-hmm. Cannabis again, being part of a endo system in our bodies, as a part of our genetic makeup, literally antagonizes these two receptors, and there could be three or four, but we call them CB1 and CB2, in a way that it makes the cells and at the, you know, the genetic level, literally operate at as efficient a level as it possibly can. And so, you know, we think that what's going on with cannabis is not only is it because of the, you know, effects of THC and CBD and some of the other cannabinoids that are prevalent, it may help the brain process pain differently. And it may also be helping to put the cells back in a homeostatic configuration, meaning back in a neutral zone, back in working at its at their top efficiency. And because of that, it seems to affect the way the nerves respond to the damage that's been caused by MS. And for me, it doesn't absolutely completely negate my pain, but it helps me cope with it in a different way. It helps make it a little bit more bearable. It also literally almost immediately will stop my tremors. And no one can explain why that happens, but it does. And it literally is, you know, in some cases has completely helped me or helped to alleviate some neuropathic areas that have been kind of locked in pain. It's taken away. I had, you know, before I really started on a regimen that was a daily regimen of CBD and other things, I you know, experienced some spots like trigeminal neuralgia, pain in my face and some of the things. But then after, I noticed after 2 or 3 months of solid titration, it went away and has never come back.
Wow.
And, you know, we've now seen in peer-reviewed written documents coming from around the world, we know that certain cannabinoids have special anti-inflammatory capabilities that literally affect cancer cells and affect the areas around cancer. So this has all been documented and is in peer review documentation. You can look it up, go up online and find them. So the more and more we study this, the more and more we're starting to find out that this is something that should have been like it was before 1937, a part of your daily regimen.
Sure. Sure. There's a lot. The pain's really difficult, isn't it? It's just for diagnosis and actually understanding how it's being improved. So it's quite hard to measure. But, you know, the proof is in the pudding. If you're able to live a more normal and fuller life, then clearly it's working on some levels. And you actually just talked about an interesting point about your particular regimen. So how have you found that? Have you been physician-led or have you had to experiment on your own in terms of figuring out dosing, which cannabinoids work, which terpenes are better for you, you know, vaping, ingesting?
Over my journey now for well over 20 years, I've literally dug in and done more research than I think most doctors do. You know, I don't really, you know, I speak to some authorities. There are several doctors now in the United States that have literally, because we've now started at some major universities teaching courses on the endocannabinoid system. Now doctors are starting to approach it as they would approach any other area of medicine. And there are some that are becoming very learned. So I've been listening to some of them, but a lot of them are only literally repeating back to me what I was talking about 5 and 6 years ago. So I've literally led my own journey. I discovered long ago, long before, you know, the term CBD was even being used in most written documentation or even being spoken about. You know, I was seeking out CBD products back in 2001 and 2002. I was identifying terpenes and terpene profiles of different, you know, cultivars that I knew would give me more relief. And, you know, terpenes have been around for a long time. We've looked at terpenes. Terpenes are nothing more than, you know, the molecules that help to give plants their fragrance, color, and taste. And they also help to make plants in some ways more bioavailable. And so if you study terpenes, which I did and started looking at terpenes back in, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, recognizing that the plant has so much more in it than we thought, you know, I was looking for those kind of cultivars that seem to help me better than other ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very early on, back in as far as 2000, I literally became a keef user rather than a flower user. And, you know, people don't know what keef is. Keef is the trichomes and basically, for lack of a better term, the pollen that's created by a cannabis flower. And I say I'm using that term loosely. It's the pollen. It's not necessarily pollen. But it contains the largest amount of trichomes and some of the oils that are right there. And those oils end up being incorporated and helping to make the leaves bigger. I have bypassed a lot of the leafy material and been using mostly Keef now for almost 20 years. And then when I decided to enter the marketplace, I decided to create my own product where I was using whole flower, broad spectrum cannabinoids to produce an oil that literally would be, you know, married together with other cultivars so that I had a broader spectrum of the terpenes also, and so that I could kind of dial in a formulation that seemed to work for me better. And I have been an oil, I'm a vaping person and oil and edible CBD for now years.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I think what I love about how this thing is evolving is the idea of personalized medicine, and therefore everyone needs to experiment a little bit, because what works for your physiology will be different to the things that work for mine. Have you found that sort of aspect of things?
Well, I think you're absolutely 100% right. I mean, I think that, you know, that's the reason why, you know, now I don't necessarily agree with the fact that, you know, we are constantly crossbreeding, coming up with new names and new, you know, cultivars that really are just old cultivars that are always here. I think that, you know, if we can get back to the original science of maybe 7 or 8 different types of cannabis, and then really look at those as deeply as we can, taking those apart and looking at all of the component parts. I mean, well, back, you know, 20 years ago, we thought there was only 2 cannabinoids. Well, now we know that there is over 166 cannabinoids. We thought that, you know, plants had only, you know, a small number of individual terpenes. And now we're realizing that, you know, most of the plants have about 20 to 30 terpenes, although they may come in different percentages per plant. So now it's a matter of the individual trying to find what works best for them. And I really do believe that, you know, there will come a day once we've done the proper science that we will be able to dial in a formulation for each individual person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really exciting area. And, you know, we're only just at the beginning, which is crazy, but you kind of talked a bit about it. So, I mean, you founded a company called Lentiv Scientific. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Absolutely. I founded a company called Lentiv Scientific now about 5 years ago. And we were, I literally was trying to create the products that work best for me and then broaden them out a little bit to see if maybe if other people who were looking for relief could get relief. And, you know, so far it's worked. I had one production partner. I've now ended that relationship and I'm about to try to do it again with another production partner, but I've created an entire line of CBD products that have specific terpene profiles. I've also created an entire line of THC products that are THC and CBD plus terpenes together in an oil and also in an edible gel cap. And they've done very, very well in the marketplace. People have enjoyed them. And now I'm working to, you know, begin a relationship with a new manufacturing partner, and hopefully, you know, my CBD products will be able to be, you know, sold internationally worldwide.
Yeah. Quickly, where did you get the name Lentiv from?
Lentiv, if you put an E on it, is a term that was used back at the turn of the century to mean assuaging pain, lessening pain. It's a real word, lenitive. And so I just dropped the E and, you know, stylized it so that I could use it as a name, and that's where it came from.
Fantastic. And actually, I should have asked you this before, but if we're talking about pain, I read a lot about THC being, you know, kind of a big driver in tackling pain, but you seem to have referred to CBD quite a lot. Are you using a mix to treat your pain?
Absolutely. No ifs, ands, or buts. I think, you know, again, THC is more, I think, associated with the euphoria effect in actually separating your mind in a way from the pain. But does it really actually, is it as good as an anti-inflammatory? Right now, the jury is still out because we think that CBD and THC both have anti-inflammatory capabilities and don't really know which one has the higher. It seems that THC works extremely well against cancer cells and cancer damage when it comes to an anti-inflammatory response. But CBD seems to have, you know, and has shown a very clear ability to, you know, lessen people's pain. And I think it's because, again, of that homeostasis that it helps to cause in the cells.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, we've got so much more to learn. And undoubtedly, there's going to be more cannabinoids that will enter the picture as well.
We're already looking at right now, I mean, everything from CBN to CBG to THCA, the active versions of CBD, CBDV, there's variant versions. So yeah, there's so much more to learn and there's so much information out there right now. So I think that, most people would be better off if in fact they were using, broader spectrum cannabis and using that as their test platform.
Yeah, for sure. You also have a podcast, which is quite nice.
Well, yes, I've got a podcast that's anybody can check out anywhere you get your podcast. It's called Let's Be Blunt with Montel, where we talk about and tackle anything and everything cannabis and other issues such as, and I also have another one that's called Free Thinking, and both of those podcasts are up right now. You can get them, iHeartRadio and several other places that you get your podcasts.
Great. Well, I'll put all links to those when we push the show out. But how have you found that after a career on mainstream TV? How have you found the podcasting world?
It's been, I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy having the conversations that I've been having with people, almost on a daily basis. And maybe I'll do three more podcasts tomorrow. It's a whole nother world, but it also gives you an opportunity to reach an audience that doesn't take the time to look at TV anymore.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? And I think, it's probably quite lockdown friendly because you can do things like this and talk to people across the world quite easily.
Absolutely.
Cool. So as we get towards the end, maybe we'll just do a bit of kind of crystal ball gazing. Yeah. How do you see things going in the future? What are the big sort of things we're looking forward to in this space?
Well, I mean, I really think that we're hitting turning point, and COVID is the monkey wrench that's been thrown into this. It's like it's got people, deflected and looking in other directions where I think this is the direction they should be looking in. For as far as the United States goes, it depends on who literally wins the election, I think, on November 3rd. We could see another calamitous 4 years if, in fact, Donald Trump ends up being reelected. And if Biden gets reelected, we could see 4 years that may make a couple of strides in the right direction, but it'll also take a couple of steps backwards. Biden has not been one of the biggest supporters of cannabis, and partly because he has been so misinformed, even currently still misinformed today. He's a guy who will say in a speech that, he still believes that cannabis is a gateway drug, which we know now science has proven it's not. But at least he and Kamala Harris have discussed decriminalizing cannabis, which I think would be the first start, but really wouldn't in any way, shape, or form be the move that needs to happen. I mean, honestly, in the United States, what we need to do is deschedule cannabis and get out of the federal business of cannabis in any way, shape, or form. If you notice that around the world, and a lot of people don't know that, it was a 1962 UN resolution that was signed on to by lots of countries that literally stopped and slowed down the distribution of hemp worldwide. But now so many countries are pulling out of that treaty. Colombia has legalized cannabis as a state product. Mexico is about to do the same thing. I think Argentina, Spain, lots of countries around the world are starting to recognize the medical viability. And, when we found out that cannabis was literally probably one of the frontline defenses against opioid addiction, I think a lot of people have decided that, maybe we ought to just stop, slow down, and listen to the science. And so I'm hoping that over the next, 2 to 3 years, that's what people will do, is listen to the science, and science will lead the way. And if it does so, then we should be looking at a place in the next 2 to 3 years where internationally there'll be an alternative medication on the marketplace for everyone to use.
Fingers crossed. And do you think federal legalization could happen in the next few years?
I think what'll happen in the United States, it'll be federal decriminalization if, in fact, Biden gets elected. Decriminalization, not legalization, but decriminalization. Right. And then he would then turn it over to the individual states. Well, what we've seen so far in the United States, especially for this last 6 months, is that cannabis is probably one of the only recession-proof businesses that are out there. I mean, almost every single state where there is a cannabis law in place and they allow for the sale. First off, in almost every state where there's been a medical cannabis program, cannabis has been considered an essential product, an essential business. And so it's been able to operate during all of the restrictions that most states levy on businesses. And that was really important. And I think if, in fact, they decriminalize and leave it up to the states, I think that's where we'll start the process of getting this right.
Absolutely. Well, here's hoping for a positive result on November the 3rd, I guess.
Everybody's got their fingers crossed here.
Absolutely.
It's hard to see. You know, I mean, the debacle started, 2014, and there's no reason why it started. So let's, oh, sorry, 2016. So, hopefully, it'll end 2020.
Fingers crossed. Cool. Well, Montel, thank you so much for sparing the time today. It's been great to chat to you.
No, sir. Thank you so much. I really, really appreciate, doing what you're doing there. And, I think it's going to take us from every direction, hitting this as hard as we can to make people finally understand that they've had something looking them in the face for the last 5,000 years that they've ignored that could bring a lot of relief to a lot of people.
Absolutely. I hope so, too. And we'd love to have you on again at some point in the future.
Sure. Anytime. Just reach out.
Cool. Thank you, Montel.
Yes, sir. You take care of yourself. Be well.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining me for that. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy it, please hit subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use. I'd also love a nice 5-star review on iTunes if you have the time. You can also follow the Cannabis Conversation page on LinkedIn and also sign up to my mailing list via cannabis-conversation.com. Until next week, have a good one.